that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Hey, I'm Ann Eller this afternoon. It is 4:07 in the afternoon, and we are privileged to have Tut Underwood here from the South Carolina State Museum. We've been down there several times to check out things and look at the exhibits, and this time Tut said, I'll come up here to Greenwood and talk to your listeners about what's going on down there at the museum. So how you doing today, Tut?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here. Thank you, Ann, for having me.
Absolutely. So, what is going on down at the museum? Just had a new exhibit open.
That's right. We sure did. It's called Between the Spring Made Sheets, and it's all about...
sounds a little risque, Tut.
Well, it was 50 years ago, maybe, or 60 years ago, but it's pretty tame, actually. What it is, though, it's an exhibit of advertising art that was used by Springs Mills up in Fort Mill to advertise their sheets after World War II. Springs Mills is a giant of the textile industry, as we all know, but it wasn't always so. As a matter of fact, in 1931, when Colonel Elliot Springs inherited the business from his father, it was struggling. But he was a sharp guy. He had been, as a matter of fact, a World War I flying ace.
How about that?
And he was very dashing and visionary and forward-thinking and bold. And so after World War II, he had had this idea on his mind for years, and he decided now the time is right because... sheets were just sheets, you know? There's not a lot to get excited about.
Sexy.
Yeah, exactly.
But actually they are.
But, well, he made them that way because he started this ad campaign in which featured these pretty girls and kind of suggestive copy, because mostly it was magazine ads in those days. Television was just in its infancy. And so it was mostly advertising and in newspapers and magazines. And so they had a lot of copy that went along with it. And it was a lot of it was double entendre and kind of pun laced and things like this that could be considered quite risque for its day. And there was kind of a controversy over this advertising. However, the controversy is what he wanted because it got people talking and looking and saying, did you see that? And what do you think? And it put Spring Made in people's minds because he realized he needed to stand out from the pack because sheets are pretty much sheets, you know. So he did this and it worked. I mean, it created a controversy, but caught the public's imagination, and the things just started flying off the shelves, and it rescued the business and made Springs Mills one of the giants of the industry.
Well, of course, that was back during the time of the pinup art and the calendars,
right,
and everything. So
right,
that all fell right together there.
Sure did.
Now, where did this collection come from?
It came from, most of it's come from the Springs Close Family Collection. But it was put together a year or two ago by Winthrop University, and it was traveled down to Columbia from Winthrop Galleries, and it was curated by Winthrop University Galleries director. And it's a really neat thing because it shows you some of the finished art and sometimes the preliminary sketches. Some of it's black and white, some of it's color. And the interesting thing, too, is that Springs hired some of the best artists in the country. I mean, well-known illustrators to do these paintings. Not just one did them all, but they're all done by a variety of artists. And he had very strict standards and stuff. He wanted the girls to be appealing, but he did not want them to look overly sexy or overly like victimized or anything like that at all. He wanted them playful and kind of cartoony, that kind of thing. So there was really, you know, you look at it today and it's very mild stuff. I mean, you could hardly see why anybody was, you
got
know,
so excited
bothered
about
by
it.
Yeah, but like I say, some of the copy was a little double entendre and stuff like that. But you've got here, one of them is a milkmaid. I mean, she's covered from head to toe, you know, in a big long dress and everything like that. But she's got kind of a cocked eyebrow, you know, a little kind of come hither look or something like that, maybe. And there's another one dressed in a cocktail waitress outfit, or maybe a French maid or something like that. She's, you know, shows pretty legs and stuff like that, but just nothing compared to today. There's another one, an ice skater, you know, with her legs stretched out, you know, and but. You know, this is just very tame stuff for today, you know, because today almost anything goes, as you know, in advertising.
Even nakedness.
Just about, yeah. Certainly in the movies. But, you know, this It was another time.
There was another
and,
time.
But it showed how clever that Springs was. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book about it called How to Put the Broad in Broadcloth. And that was the name of one of his other ads as well.
Sure.
And he wrote this book and talked about all his adventures, you know, as an air pilot and the campaign and that kind of thing. And there was something else I was going to say, and it just flew out of my mind like his airplane. But the neat thing about...
These pictures here are getting to you.
Oh, yeah. That's better. No, they're very, very tame. Oh, this is what it was. His competitors at the time thought this was shocking. They called his ads degrading. But today, they are studying his marketing campaigns in marketing classes in universities all over the world.
Oh, sure.
He was a savant. He was a visionary. And he was, I guess, one of the original guys who realized that, as they say, sex sells.
Yep.
And by George, it did for him.
Sure. And even though it was a different time, it was risque for the time.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, I love the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s pinup art.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just, it just puts such, it puts a smile on your face.
Yeah.
You
and it really identifies a time and space, you know, 1930s, 1940s, like you say. That's before you had video cameras and everybody could take professional pictures and the whole thing.
Sure.
And paintings were still, you know, valuable and wanted and commonly done in advertising. Now somebody does graphic art in advertising. Well, it's not painting. It's not hand something. They've just clipped it from somewhere and stuck it in there, maybe resized it or whatever.
Sure.
But it's the machine's doing most of the work for you instead of you drawing by hand. And one thing I was going to tell you, too, he, as I said, he got well-known artists to do these things, and one of the most well-known, probably the most well-known to me, is James Montgomery Flagg. And if you don't know who James Montgomery Flagg is, you know his art, because he did one of the most famous paintings in American history that's in everybody's mind. In World War I, and it reused again in World War II, he did the art for the poster of Uncle Sam pointing at you and going, "I want you."
There you go.
So Uncle Sam Wants You came out of the pen and brush of James Montgomery Flagg. And that has become part of our national fabric, I think. I mean, that's in everybody's mind.
It's
everybody's
iconic.
Seen it.
It's
really
iconic.
Is. That's absolutely exactly right. It is iconic. And Springs gave these artists very specific orders about what he wanted. And if they got it wrong, he would write them a letter and list all the things he wanted fixed and that kind of thing. You know, not too sexy, just coy and this and that and the other and whatever. And so it worked, and so now people can come in and see this art, and they can also see some articles of clothing made out of some of the cloth made at the Springs Mills too, because they didn't use make exclusively bed sheets, but they did most of their business that way. Of course, in World War II, they were doing all kinds of other things as well.
Sure.
But they developed some of the techniques and things like this. I think they were asked to develop a cotton cloth that wouldn't wrinkle so badly and stuff. So they got chemical treatments and put it on the cloth and, you know, discovered new ways to manufacture cloth and that kind of thing. So they were making progress. And he also revamped his factories and modernized and upgraded his materials and his equipment too, so that he was ready. When the big boom came, he was ready. And in addition to this, too, a lot of these paintings, he would have his female employees model for the paintings. He would take a picture of them, a photograph, and give it to the artist and say, "This is what I've got in mind," so that he could
pass the information along.
Exactly, yeah. Like he wanted it, other than just describing it.
Sure.
And then they would then take off from that and do the art. And as a matter of fact, we are having, in a couple of weeks over at the museum, what we call Spring Made Day. That's on Saturday the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having a tour of the exhibit by the original curator. And we are having a film. ATV actually did a film called Miss Spring Made about this campaign and the women that were models and stuff, and feature some of them. And afterwards, just before 5 o'clock Saturday, and we've got a 5 o'clock reception as well that's open. And some of the original models are going to be there, too.
Oh, my goodness.
The Spring Made models. You know, they're in their 80s and 90s now, but they were factory workers at Springs Mills back in those days, and they were
Look what happened with Rosie the Riveter.
Right.
I mean, you know,
an icon as well.
Exactly.
And so they'll be there to talk and tell about their experiences and sign autographs, take pictures, whatever. So it's going to be a fun day.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. You know, we are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, but first off, how long is this exhibit going to be here?
It's up here until September the 8th.
So
it just started last Friday, so it's just brand
new. All right, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Cloudy out there, live after 5, I think, is coming up at 6 o'clock. Isn't that interesting? Live after 5 is coming up at 6 o'clock.
Well, 6 is after 5, I guess, you know.
It is.
You think of 5 minutes after 5 or something, but 6...
It still qualifies.
11 o'clock is after 5 o'clock.
Yes, so. you're right.
So
they're
going right,
to have the Southern Brotherhood are coming to town, so that's supposed to be going on. I haven't heard anything else about that, so I assume that that is going on in Uptown Greenwood. Make sure you're there. This is going to be a huge concert event, so check that out. 6 to about 8:30 is when it's going on, and then you can eat Uptown in Greenwood and just see all the things that are going on. Plus, they have music at all the restaurants up there, so you can continue the party at any of the great Uptown restaurants right here in Greenwood. But right now, we are talking to Tut Underwood. He is, of course, from the South Carolina State Museum. And, you know, the interesting thing about May every year is Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. And you've got a big party going on down here, don't you?
We do. On Saturday and Sunday, we're doing a two-day Cinco de Mayo. So I guess we're doing Cuatro de Mayo and Cinco de Mayo.
Okay.
But since Sunday's a short day, we're doing it for 2 days. It's a family event, and you can come and bring the kids, and we're having all kinds of fun things like, Hispanic games and crafts. We're having a pinata for the kids. And for the adults, too, we're having another pinata we're calling the Unbreakable Pinata. And that kind of came out of an idea we did.
The Unbreakable Pinata.
Yeah.
You can swat it all you want. It's not going to break.
It's not going to break. That's right. Well, we'll see if it breaks. But kind of came from an event last year we had a pinata at, and it was very tough. And the kids couldn't break it. So we had to get a couple of the big men to take a baseball bat to it, and finally got it to break. And we thought it was so funny that it took so much to break it and to get into the candy that we decided, well, let's just have that back and call it the Unbreakable Pinata and see if we can make it even more unbreakable, you know.
Sure.
That'll be for the adults, and then, of course, the regular one for the kids. And then we've got a family that's going to be talking about memories of Mexico, and we've got Suzuki Strings of USC going to be providing some music at the beginning of the day, about 10:45 or so.
It's running on Saturday.
Right, Saturday. It's 10:45 to 4 on Saturday and 1 to 4 on Sunday. And the Suzuki Strings are a child's violin group. You know, Suzuki Method is a method of teaching string music to children. And these kids are really supposed to be good. So I'm looking forward to that. And we've got some food. Some of it's for purchase and some of it's free, just little snacks, the Mexican snacks and that kind of thing, and others you can buy. And
The Mayan exhibit there.
Oh, yes, of course, the Mayan exhibit. That's kind of the reason for being, as a matter of fact, the whole thing. It got us into the mood because we have this big blockbuster exhibit, Secrets of the Maya, and they were in Mexico and Central America and stuff like that, and it's a wonderful exhibit, and it's 125 artifacts that are from the ancient Maya civilization, and these things are centuries old. Some of them go back to, like, the year 250, and we've got ocarinas and pots and pottery and articles of clothing and all sorts of things, some weaponry, some spear points that are 1,000 years old, oh, I don't know what all. As a matter of fact, though, there are some other articles that are made by modern-day Mayas, because people tend to think of the Mayas like they think of other ancient civilizations, that they're gone, like the Romans are gone. Well, actually, there are Romans over in Rome today. They're just not the Caesars and the Roman soldiers that we typically think about when we think about ancient Rome. Well, the Mayans of today aren't the Mayans of the ancient world either, but they are still with us in Mexico and Central America, and they still do pottery and they make cloth and things like this. So we have a few articles that are made by modern Mayas as well, and one section of the exhibit is a photography exhibit of today's Maya people and their colorful costumes and their everyday things, doing some of the things they do, playing musical instruments and weaving cloth and different things. So it's a multifaceted thing. And another thing that is another kind of section is a fascinating tale of the recovery of the Temple of the Warriors down in Mexico. And in 1923 and 24, a couple went down there, the Morrises. They were a newlywed couple. They were archaeologists, and they did a dig down there. They ran this expedition that uncovered, because this ancient temple had been just buried under centuries of dirt and leaves and junk and rocks.
Wow.
Had just built up over it. And so, but some of the taller buildings, you know, in the villages were still around, and they were made of stone. So they were still stood, and they knew where these towns were, but they were just kind of overgrown by the jungle. And they went in there and uncovered it. They had to, a lot of workers and stuff, and they brought the dirt down one wheelbarrow at a time, and they had to meticulously go through the dirt, sift through it to make sure they weren't throwing away anything of value, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be small coins or little things or whatever, and they did that one wheelbarrow full at a time for 4 years. Now, they didn't do it a year running because they had the rainy season. They couldn't work during the rainy season, but about, I think it was April to November, for 4 years they were down there doing that. And this temple had, it was up on a big platform, kind of like the base of a pyramid, and their pyramids are down there too, of course, but it was very flat, and it was like two-thirds of an acre or something. And then they had hundreds of pillars, and so they uncovered that and restored it, and it was just a fascinating story of what they found and how they did it. There's a lot of photographs. Some artifacts include Mr. Morris, Earl Morris's pith helmet, and his leggings. They were called, let me think if I can think of the word, gaiters. They're these leather leggings that go, you know, under your knee, down to your, just cover your calf, apparently.
Snake bites? And
snake bites or scratches, you know, from the thorns and thistles and that kind of thing. And I don't know if it absolutely keep out snake bites, but it would certainly make it more difficult.
Down.
Yeah, slow them down. That's right. It would give you some protection from, and of course, from the chiggers and the bugs of all kinds. You know, they would love to eat you alive and that kind of thing. So that kept them off a little bit. But you see those in a lot of photographs. And there's a reproduction of Anne Morris's diary in which she recorded some of the things that they discovered, not only about the Indians, but she wrote about wildlife that they came across, snakes and jaguars and things like this, wild jungle animals and that kind of thing, and then the foliage and the crew and all kinds of things, because there were lots of things going on. You know, it took a lot of people to do that thing. Some of them were diggers, some of them were cooks, some of them were housekeepers, some of them were, you know.
And when exactly, what years were they doing this?
This is 1924 to 1928.
And that was when things were a lot different, when you talk about digging and doing and the equipment and everything that they didn't have to do this. Yeah.
That was kind of the time when archaeology was huge, and you know, King Tut's tomb had just been opened in 1922 over in Egypt, and you know, it's kind of the Indiana Jones era, if you will. And although people are still out there doing things like that, not quite the huge, you know, wow stuff, but you know, archaeology is alive and well as a science, and they're out there digging around, finding out about everything from, well, as a matter of fact, today, as a matter of fact, I saw something in the paper about Jamestown, Virginia. They thought it had been washed away, eaten up by the, eroded by the river, and they actually found, several years ago, actually, that it was not washed away, and they've been digging around, and they found some bones of some of the inhabitants, you know, because one winter it was so harsh that a lot of people starved to death and stuff like that. So they found some of the remains of those people. So And it's going on all around us all the time. But this was a particularly exciting adventure down in Mexico to uncover the Temple of the Warriors and learn more about the ancient Maya.
Temple of Doom.
Yes. that was one of the Indiana Jones's adventures.
Absolutely. Well, we are here with Tut Underwood. Hey, if you got a question for us, don't hesitate to give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Time for the news. We'll be right back.
There's no business like show business.
That's right. It's show business at the Newbury Opera House. From Broadway plays to beach, bluegrass, classic, and contemporary country music, and big band, too. And don't forget world-renowned dance and singer-songwriter and Great World Adventure series, too. Only at the Newbury Opera House. Check out all their offerings online at newburyoperahouse.com or call 803-276-6264. Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, our very special guest all the way from Columbia, South Carolina. Yes, in the left-hand corner in the orange chair.
Weighing 198 pounds.
Is the one and only Tut Underwood representing the South Carolina State Museum. We're having a good time talking about all the good stuff coming up at the museum. Happening right now, of course, is the Mayan exhibit. They're going to have a big weekend with Cinco de Mayo. They've got a lot going on. You know, we were talking about some of the interesting. I was asking you if you had any gold coins. Mm-hmm. You told me you didn't have any gold coins, but you had these, what did you call them, kill plates?
Yeah, kill holes. The plates with kill holes in them, right. That was a tradition of the ancient Mayas, and the exhibit has lots of these beautiful pottery and plates and things like this. They're elegantly decorated and painted. You know, they had all kinds of symbols, and they had their own method of writing, hieroglyphs and stuff, sort of like the Egyptians, you know. And they would do like a lot of ancient civilizations did. When somebody died, they would bury them with some of their possessions so they could use them in the next world. But they believed that they had to kill the possessions in order for them to go with the dead.
Right.
So they would drill a hole right in the middle of like their plates or their pots or whatever. These are called kill holes. And when somebody died, they would take a plate that belonged to them, drill a kill hole into the middle of the plate, and put the plate over the face of the person who's died so that the person's spirit could escape through the kill hole. Yeah, and so why waited for the kill hole and the plate to be put over his face for escaping? I don't know. And I don't know why it came out of the, maybe his breath came out of the nose or something like that, I guess. That way it wouldn't shoot out of his toes or something like that. But anyway, those are beautiful, beautiful plates and dishes and things. And some of them, one of them even has dried cocoa beans in it. Of course, the Mayas gave us chocolate. Mm-hmm. So we owe them for that big time.
Absolutely. Who could live without
other,
chocolate?
Yeah. Yeah, and other crops and things like this too, you know. I think pinto beans and some kinds of corn and squash and, you know, a lot of things. Actually, they developed and cultivated, you know, thousands of years ago because they were around 2000 BC.
Now, what effect has the fact that the calendar, the Mayan calendar, it didn't end?
Right.
What happened there?
It stopped in December, and right. Some people thought the world was going to end, but obviously it did not. And
so there's no more calendar for the Mayans?
Right. But the Mayans, they didn't believe the world was going to end. It was just like you would pick up a calendar of 2013. Well, it ends on December 31st, but the world doesn't end after that. You just make a new calendar, pick up a new calendar, and you keep going.
And why did everybody believe that the world was coming to an end?
I don't think everybody did, but it was a fun thing.
Oh, yes, they did.
Well, look, there are always some people out there that are going to believe anything about the end of the world, but it was a fun thing, obviously. And we actually had an end-of-the-world party ourselves at the museum a couple of nights prior to when the world was supposed to
end. Was it well attended, Tut?
It was very well attended.
You said nobody believed it. See, what am I talking about
here? Well, people like an excuse to to party, I think. You know, that was the most thing. But it's a fun thing to talk about and that kind of thing. But I don't think that they really believed the world was going to end there. They just made this calendar, and it was good for 5,000 years, so they figured we got all the time in the world to make another one. So they never did.
And then, of course, they didn't make another one, did they?
Right, well, but it was about 5,000 years long. So,
so that's why they could believe that the world was ending.
They had a couple of different calendars, though, because they had an accurate 365-day calendar. They really did. Okay. It didn't have leap year in it, but the big one was called the long count, so that was lots of calendars put together, I guess. But they had a 365-day calendar. They had, like I said, hieroglyphic writing. They had a very sophisticated mathematics system built on 20 instead of 10 like we do. And they were the first civilization in the Western Hemisphere, maybe the first in the world, we're not sure, but certainly one of them, to use the concept of zero in their mathematics.
Well, they were very advanced people,
they
weren't
they? They were very advanced, just like the Egyptians were in the Eastern Hemisphere, the Mayas were in the Western Hemisphere. So it was really cool. It's a wonderful exhibit. So I hope everybody will come over and see this before it ends. It goes through June the 9th, so you've got about another month to go. So come on down and check it out and all the other great things.
Absolutely. Now, you know, I see where you're having a Story Fest down there on June 1st. What is Story Fest about?
Story Fest is just an event that we have with the State Library, and they kind of do it where the service, the location. But they come over and they tell stories and read stories, and children's authors come and sign books and that kind of thing. And they try to get kids interested in reading. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe writing too, eventually, you know.
Sure.
And they're encouraged to come, and every kid's going to receive a literacy bag and books that with the featured authors in them and that kind of thing. And so it's going to be a nice, fun time from 10 to 5 on the 13th. I think some people are going to read stories from Sammy, the story chair, which is our chair at the museum. It's a painted-up special rocking chair that we've had people reading stories in there. And celebrities like Joe Pinner of WISTV, he has read stories from the Sammy the Story Chair. So it's just a fun family event with if you've got little kids that like to be read to, come on down, get some children's books, meet some of the authors, and enjoy Story Fest on June the 1st. That's Saturday, June the 1st. That's almost a month away. Yeah, a month away.
Exactly.
Yeah, all kinds of things. We got stuff this weekend. We got all kinds of things on the weekends. We got summer camps during the summer and stuff like that, too.
Sure. And if people want to get hooked up with the museum, like from up here in Greenwood, you know, I think it's easy when you're right there in Columbia, but how do you find out about what's going on at the museum?
Okay, anytime. Just get on the computer and look us up at our website. It's very easy to find, SouthCarolinaStateMuseum.org. That's it, our name, .org. And it's got all the schedule of events and all the latest exhibits and activities going on. It'll tell you everything you need to know and who to contact. If you need to contact somebody in person, you can send us an email, you can call us on the phone, whatever. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because you can also join the Friends of the State Museum and support us financially and do good for yourself, too, because the membership in the Friends of the State Museum is a great bargain. It's a wonderful benefits. If you join the Friends, you can get free admission, general admission, all through the year, every day. It does not include the extras like your Secrets of the Maya or Blockbusters. Those cost extra, but you get in free otherwise all year round. You get a 10% discount all year round in our wonderful store, the Cotton Mill Exchange, 10% off in our cafe, the Crescent Cafe, which, by the way, is temporarily closed just because we got construction going on, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
And all kinds of things. You get our quarterly magazine images. Well, it depends on what level. You can get a single membership, I think, for about $35 a year.
That's a bargain.
A family is about $70. Don't hold me. This is approximations in my feeble mind, because I don't administer the members program, but I think that's right. And you can get a business for on up, you know, a couple hundred or something like that. It goes on up. But most people, I think, like the family membership, and that way you can bring the kids and all, and everybody in the family gets in free, and the media family, the mother, father, and their children get in free all the time. And so you can save your money back in no time. If you shop at the store and get discounts there, and you come to the museum a couple of times a year, and of course you want to come more often than that, because there's always something new and different changing and things on the weekends. You get discounts on our summer camps. I was mentioning that a minute ago. So there's just so many neat things. You get discounts on programs and things like this. You get special days like when the Maya exhibit opened, we had a special day for the Friends where they could come at a discount even from the regular fee for the exhibit. They get in at a discount for that, plus the regular free admission.
And I suppose they had a special time, so they got to kind of preview it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that makes you feel extra special.
Right, and so we just try to treat our friends right. But the thing is, as much as you get from your membership, what I like to say is the real reason you should join the State Museum is to preserve the culture of our wonderful state. We have a state we are so fortunate in that is has more heritage and more history than most because we were one of the original 13.
Right.
So, you know, we've got a lot richer heritage than Montana or even Texas or Nebraska or...
But you never hear that much about it, do you?
Yeah, but we've got it, and we're collecting it, and we keep it so that we can tell the story of South Carolina from an art perspective, from a science perspective, from a history perspective, from a natural history perspective. And so we call it South Carolina Under One Roof because we've got a floor of each of those, a floor of art, a floor of history, a floor of natural history, a floor of science and technology. So it's something for everybody. If you love art but hate history, that's all right. Come on down. We got art for you. If you hate history and love science, we got science. If you love history, come on down. But, of course, we've got such a rich state, and you're supporting the preservation of the culture and the heritage of this great state. And that's really why you should join the Friends of the State Museum.
And if we're not careful, we could lose our history, so many places are beginning to, and, you know, what is happening in our culture and everything.
Right.
You want to make sure that you keep the culture alive from what it was, regardless of what it changes to, but what it was.
That's right.
Someday we may go back to those values and say, you know, those were a good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we collect things from today, too. We don't just collect old things because that pen on your paper there, in 50 years, that pen will be 50 years old. And that we might have that in a museum saying, Ann Eller, the star of WCRS, once used this pen.
That's right.
You know,
she signed her name on the line and took a chance. Absolutely. Hey, I'm here with Ted Underwood. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, don't you? Go away.
Everyone knows Sharp Facets Gallery only carries the finest in jewelry. But did you know we offer the three R's? Repairs, replacement, and restoration. Repairs from sizing to stone replacement. Restoration of your treasured pieces to their former beauty. Or revamping or restyling by resetting your stones in new mountings. All repairs are done by our master goldsmith, Richard. Only Sharp Facets Gallery can provide you with both quick turnaround and professional reliable service. Come see us at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass or call 229-6613.
Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here with Tut Underwood, getting all fired up here, talking about old radio stations and how that some of the, you were talking about the videotapes and the audio tapes and that you need to transfer. You have some down there at the radio, at the museum. And these things need to be preserved because once they're gone, they're gone.
That's right. That's history. So we're going to try to find some way to save some of the tapes that we have and documentaries and whatever like that. You know, some of them, of course, have been the better ones or the more famous ones, I should say, have been transferred, you know, by the professionals onto DVDs and things like that. But one of these days, they'll transfer it to another type of technology, and DVDs and CDs they're already fading.
They are. And, you're right.
So in another 10 or 20 years, I mean, my kid, he never plays CDs. I gave him give him music CDs for Christmas sometimes, and he'll transfer it to his iPad or his iPhone or his computer, and he never plays the CDs.
Yeah, so, but you know what? The old records have great sound.
They do.
You know, and when you heard music on the old radios with the tubes and everything, I tell you what, there's not much that can beat that.
That's very true.
Yeah, and you know, actually, you know, have you seen some of the albums? Some artists are actually recording on regular records.
LPs again. Yes. Yeah. They are. They never completely went away. Just a few tiny ones survived. And now they're coming back. And as a matter of fact, the LP has such a cachet to it among vinyl collectors and specialists and aficionados, audiophiles, whatever you want to call them, that they are now more expensive than CDs. When CDs first came out, they were more expensive than LPs.
Sure.
But now LPs have more prestige now, you know.
I was noticing, since I'm in the radio business, that you just got an extensive collection of historic radios down there.
Right. And these are not the old-time radios of the 30s and 40s. These are actually from the 60s. This is a collection of transistor radios that were collected in the late 50s and the 60s by a man who's a doctor now. And he got the latest technology when he was a kid and just started picking them up and that kind of thing. Some of them are pocket size. Some of them are very much smaller than that, like 2 inches square or something like that. And a couple of shortwave sets as well. And so he donated those to the museum. So we're excited about that. And one of these days we'll get them out on the floor. They're not on exhibit yet because we just can't exhibit but a small fraction of our collection. But
that is a problem too, isn't it?
It is.
To have such great collections and you have to keep changing it around, which of course makes people come back.
Exactly. So you got to give them a reason to come back. And so we do that. And it's a lot of fun. And of course, we're adding on to the museum as well. So
tell us how that's coming. This is an exciting project.
It really is. We are just beside ourselves with joy that this has started. This idea came about in 1996. It's called Windows to New Worlds. It is an expansion of the museum. We're adding 70,000 square feet of new and renovated space to the museum. We are adding...
Where are you adding it at? Telling you. That parking lot? Did you take that parking lot away we used to park in?
No, but it's on the end of the building, on the east end of the building, part of it, and part of it's inside the building, and part of it's on top of the building. On top of the building, we're building a state-of-the-art observatory where we're going to have a gigantic and beautiful Alvin Clark telescope to look into the heavens at night and even in
the
daytime.
That's a huge tent. How many inches in it? That's huge.
The lens is 12 3/8 inches.
That's huge.
It is huge. It magnifies something like 400 times or something like that. And the instrument itself is like 12-14 feet long.
Sure.
It's going to be high up in the air and stuff. We'll have little steps going up to see it. And
then you'll also have video cameras coming off of it too, so you can see what is being seen on screens.
Right.
Or something.
It'll be a little eyepiece. We'll put a video camera on the eyepiece and put that so that whatever it sees can be projected onto the dome of next door, which is going to be our planetarium. And that's being built right now as well. And that's going to be a 55-foot dome, digital dome planetarium and theater. It's going to be fabulous. Not only can it do that, it can show these incredible space, 360-degree outer space films and documentaries and experiences. We can do all kinds of other films of art and history and nature in there. We can give small performances in there. We can give entertainment shows like laser light shows. You can listen to Pink Floyd or the Beatles or Beethoven or whatever, and there'll be all kinds of laser lights flashing around as you're listening to the music. It's going to be fantastic.
Psychedelic.
Psychedelic. Absolutely.
There you go. Yes. That's an old word there for you, people.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then the third element is a 4D theater. That's going in where our
4D,
that's right. If you don't know what 4D is, of course, you know that 3D is back. It's been back for a few years, and you're watching a 3D film on a large screen. But the fourth dimension is the seats. We've got special seats that correspond to what's going on in the movie. So if you're going down a bumpy road, the seats will buck. And
if
it's rainy, right? If it's raining, it'll squirt water on you. You know, just mist. It won't soak you or anything. If the wind's blowing, a fan will blow on you. You know, to give you that fourth dimension to really bring. There'll be smells and pokes and other sensations going on with these special seats. And so that's going to be going on. That's coming as well as the observatory, as well as the planetarium. So it's just going to be so much to look forward to. It's going to be huge for education. Oh, because also. There's even more. Wait, there's more.
Okay.
There's the we said the the observatory could take the eyepiece at the telescope and project what it sees onto the dome of the planetarium, which is true, but also we can take what it sees and put it straight onto the internet live so that every school class in South Carolina can see what that thing sees, and they can actually book time on it. So if Mrs. Jones's class here in Greenwood County wants to see the comet that's going by or something like that at 10 o'clock in the morning, we can turn it to that. And at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if Mrs. Smith's class down in Oconee County, up in Oconee County, wants to see the early rising of the moon or the sunspots or the eclipse of the sun or whatever is going on, we can turn it around there and show it to her, and everybody else can see it too. So, and of course, at night it'll be even better because it can see planets and galaxies and you name it. You know, it's going to be so much fun and education. It's going to be huge for education, recreation, culture. You know, it's just.
I'll bet Tom Falvey is just can't wait for this.
Oh, he can't. That's right. He's our science guy, and we're going to be hiring some more science people in here to help people, and it's just going to be a fabulous thing. And they're out there right now digging and shoving dirt around.
When's it supposed to be finished?
About a year from now, about mid-April of next year is what we are shooting for. So maybe a little less than a year from now, maybe 11 and a half months or something like that, according to what we find in the weather, of course, if it slows us up. But just last week, they had this giant drill that was drilling 43 holes in the ground to prepare for the building of the planetarium. It had to drill this drill on this thing. The whole rig stood 72 feet tall, and
wow.
The drill was 60 feet long.
Wow.
2 feet in diameter. And they drilled 40 feet down till they hit bedrock. And then when they got that hole drilled, then they would fill it with cement under pressure so there would be no bubbles or anything
right.
in it. And it, so it would be a form a column in the ground. And they did this 43 times, 43 cement columns standing on the bedrock 40 feet down. So that, and then they'll lay a 10-inch concrete pad over all that to connect them. So that thing is going to be solid, and it's not going
anywhere. It's
going to
be anywhere. Rock solid.
Rock solid is absolutely right. And so they're out there with machines and bulldozers, and oh, it's so much fun. It makes you feel like a kid just to watch those big machines.
Yeah.
I love it.
Now, let me ask you something, though.
Yeah.
This sounds like a really expensive project. Where's the money coming
okay.
from?
Okay. Well, we have been gathering money. It is expensive. It's $23.5 million, actually, $20.5 million to build in $3 million for an endowment. And this has been building up over the years. We've been fundraising for 17, 18 years now, since 1996. And half the money has come from the state. They would give us a piece at a time over a several-year period. And the other half from the private sector, private donations, corporations, whatever. And we've gotten some nice gifts from people like Boeing gave us $1 million. And
wow.
Who else gave us $1 million? I'm trying to think. A couple of more. Blue Cross Blue Shield gave us $1 million. And, you know, SEENG has been very generous with us. And a number of people. And, of course, a lot of just private citizens sending us $10, $20, $50, $100 at a time.
Is it paid for?
It is.
This is the point I wanted to get to.
Yes.
It's paid for.
It is. It's paid for.
That is phenomenal in today's economy,
right.
in today's world, to
right.
be able to say $23 million project is paid for.
Well, the $3 million isn't quite.
Well,
we're on the way. But
21.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
the building is paid for, and the endowment's on the way, but we're still collecting. So if somebody comes to you folks
right.
and asks you to donate, please be generous, because we want to put us over the top and get that endowment so that it will then fund the running of the things.
So
from here on out.
Phenomenal. You know, I hate to say this, but it is 5 o'clock.
Oh, my
Can
goodness.
You believe it? One
oh,
hour has passed us by. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Tut, is there anything else we missed that you just want to touch on real quick?
We have touched on so much. I think that if you just come to our website, SouthCarolinaStateMuseum.org. You'll get all this information we've been talking about and more, so you can see other things that are of interest to you. And just come on over and see us. You know, it's not
it's
far over
drive.
To Columbia, and it's right on the edge, right in the downtown Columbia, but you're accessible to I-126 and Hugh G Street. It's very easy to get there. Of course, the directions are on
the website.
Website. So come on down to see us. Come over on the weekend. Bring the family and have a great time. Right now, I will say this. Because of the construction, the front door is blocked, so don't let that throw you. Just you'll have to come around to the side and come in, park in a parking deck out back, and come in the side. So this is really real. The construction is going on, but we are open during construction. And as you asked me to, our hours, 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday, and 1 to 5 on Sunday. Actually, we're closed Monday during the school year, but starting Memorial Day, which is only about 3 or 4 Mondays from now, and we're open all summer, 7 days a week. So all Mondays we're open as well. But we're on the weekends. We're open 7 days a week during the summer. And come see us and take advantage of your state museum, because it's not just for Columbia, not just for the Midlands. It's for all of South Carolina. We've got artifacts from every county, including Greenwood. And so come on in and enjoy your state museum.
Absolutely. Tut Underwood, thank you so much for coming up and making the drive and coming here to spend an hour with us today.
My pleasure, Ann. Come see us.
We will be down there. We had a great time doing some other events down there.
We'll
have to be coming on down. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.